Hello, I'm Emily Harris.
And I'm Dave Miller.
Today on Think Out Loud, it's a dry year in the Klamath River Basin. Will the drought help or hurt a historic agreement aimed at ending years of water wars? The Klamath River Basin is half in Oregon, half in California. It's east of I-5 and west of Lakeview. For thousands of years, the area was low marshland, a haven for birds. 100 years ago, the U.S. drained some marshes to create farmland. The government also built an irrigation system that moves water from the Klamath River, Upper Klamath Lake, and new reservoirs to potato, peppermint, and alfalfa farms. Water disputes came and went, but in 2001, things came to a head. Angry protests got national attention when the government shut off irrigation taps to keep enough water for the fish. The next year, more water went to farmers. Downstream, fish died. This year, drought conditions are again as bad as 2001. But here's what's new. A historic water-sharing agreement was signed just a few months ago. It's fragile, it's not yet funded, and it needs approval from Congress. Today we'll find out what drought conditions farmers and fish face this year, and whether that new deal in the water wars will help farmers make it through in any way. Have you dealt with drought? Join the conversation today. Our number is 1-888-665-5865.
And we'd love to read your comments and your questions and your experience on our website, opb.org/thinkoutloud.
We start this morning with Gary Derry. He's an alfalfa farmer, and his farm is irrigated in part by water from the Klamath River Basin. He's joining us by phone today from Malin, Oregon. Gary Derry, welcome to Think Out Loud.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
Thanks for joining us. First, could you give us a sense of your land? You have different pieces of land in various parts of the irrigation district, as I understand. What land do you farm?
We farm in three different irrigation districts scattered throughout the project, approximately 500 acres. We have some land in Klamath Irrigation District, some in Shasta View Irrigation District, and some in Klamath Basin Improvement District.
Do all of these draw water from the Klamath River Basin?
They do. They're all out of Klamath Lake.
And what do you grow?
Mainly alfalfa. I do some small grain as part of my rotation.
Somebody described, a farmer has described that area as the soil being 2 million years of duck manure. Is that right?
Could you repeat that again, please?
So a farmer described the area, the soil, being basically 2 million years of duck manure. Is that right?
Well, I suppose in parts of it, certainly the lower portion of it, it was an old lake, and certainly that is the case on part of it.
It sounds like it would be pretty rich. How often do you have to water alfalfa?
Well, it depends on where you are in the project. There's several different soil types throughout the project, some from old lake bottom, some to hillside, sandy soil. There's all types of soil here.
Mm-hmm. And for you, in the different places you grow alfalfa and other grains, what kind of water, how much water do you need to use?
Well, typically a alfalfa plant uses, through the course of the season, 2.5 to 3 acre feet, depending on your soil type.
How much are you expecting to get this year relative to what you need?
Well, in my KID land,
that's the Klamath Irrigation District.
The Klamath Irrigation District land, we're uncertain. They started some flows to fill the canals a couple of days ago. We still don't know what volume of water or when that water will be there. On my Shasta View land, we're not going to receive any water this year on Shasta View. We participated in a land idling program there, so those lands are not going to receive water this year. And in the KBID land, we were told yesterday that there probably will be no deliveries on KBID lands also this year.
So how much of your land is, how would you characterize what you're facing this year compared to what you'd call a regular year?
Well, as I said, I mean, we have a very small portion of our land that may see some water at some point from Upper Klamath Lake. Everything else is going to go dry. So we're, myself, I am more fortunate than most because part of that land is covered by well. So I have an option. Now, those wells are not guaranteed to make it through the season. An unprecedented amount of groundwater will be pumped this year, and I think everybody's pretty nervous about how well those wells will produce through the year.
Mm-hmm. Gary, one recent commenter in the Oregonian said that this drought might force farmers to reconsider what crops they're going to be growing. Has this drought changed your thinking about what you're going to plant in the future?
Not so much for the future. An alfalfa is a long-term investment. So right now I'm committed to alfalfa. So my cropping patterns are about the same.
You mean once you plant it, you basically have to stick with alfalfa for a while?
Yes, it's a 5 to 10 year crop, and so you put in a huge investment first, and it takes a number of years to recover that investment, and so you're pretty well there. You've got to stay with your crop.
You mentioned some water on its way to some of your land, but you're not sure when it's going to get there or how much it'll be. How long does it take water from the Klamath River or Upper Klamath Lake to travel through irrigation canals?
Well, normally when Klamath Irrigation District starts charging their system, it takes 5 to 7 days to charge the system.
Meaning get all the irrigation canals filled and water going to farmers' lands?
Yes. Uh-huh. And this year they're charging the system at a very slow rate because of limited releases. So we're a little unsure as how long it's going to take KID to fill those facilities.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned you are not going to get any water, any surface water sent, through the irrigation system to some of your farmland, and you've decided to take part in the land idling program. Could you tell us what that means?
Well, the land idling program was a program through QWAPA, Klamath Water and Power Association. And basically, it was an open bid process. You put forth your bid, and they had X amount of dollars to spend on this project, and according to your bid and your ranking, depending on your soil type, they had the option to accept your bid, and once your bid was accepted, you agreed not to take any deliveries from Upper Klamath Lake this year.
And how much are you paid to not, to not plant a crop that would need the irrigation water?
The bid that Shasta View Irrigation District turned in was for all of the lands within Shasta View Irrigation District, and that bid was for $220 an acre.
And you can't plant anything on that land? Like if you had wells there, you couldn't use the wells?
You can use the wells, but then you're not going to qualify for a land idling payment.
Okay. And when you idle land, do you just not plant anything there, or do you plant something to hold the soil down?
Well, in a lot of cases, alfalfa has already been planted. Last fall, small grains were planted, so there's stubble on those fields to prevent soil erosion. Some people will go in with some kind of a grain to help the soil erosion this year. Those crops will not produce. They will grow 4, 5, 6 inches high, and then they will die, but it'll help the soil erosion.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture has a webpage up right now about what I think is a separate program to prevent wind erosion, soil erosion. They're paying farmers, they say, around $80 or $90 an acre to plant some kind of a cover crop that will maximize the the remaining soil moisture. Is this something you've taken part in, and is this totally separate from the idling program?
It is separate from the idling program, and I did not take part in that program, but the reason being is my properties are all planted in alfalfa, and so there's no need to have a cover crop.
You're listening to Think Out Loud on OPB. We're talking right now about a drought facing the Klamath River Basin in southern Oregon. We're talking with farmer Gary. Gary, we'll hear from another farmer in just a moment, and also talk about the historic Klamath Basin water sharing agreement that was signed a few months ago. It's facing a challenge, some people say, with this year's drought. If you have any experience with drought, or if you're a farmer in the Klamath area, give us a call. Join the conversation online. Our number is 1-888-665-5865. Our website is opb.org/thinkoutloud. Gary, stay with us. I want to bring Tom Malams into the conversation, also an alfalfa farmer. He's joining us today from Beatty, Oregon. Tom Malams, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
We appreciate you joining us. Tell us about your land, if you would. You also raise alfalfa. Where's your land?
Our land is just north of Beatty, which is east of Klamath Falls. We're a little bit higher elevation over another mountain range from where Gary farms and ranches there. Our soil is possibly a little sandier than they have down in the project. We irrigate out of wells up here and as well out of the Sycan River and the Sprague River in my immediate area here.
So do you get any water from the irrigation project?
No, we are completely off the project. That's our... The group that I'm affiliated with is the Klamath Off-Project Water Users, which would encompass anybody that is not a project farmer. That we have many members that have land in the project and off-project, but our land is specifically out of the project.
So who's in a better position as a farmer, someone who's dependent on the irrigation system or someone who's not? Gary and Tom, how do you see it?
Well, I can take a stab at that first, and then Gary can jump in. This year, obviously, out of the project is better. Our land has not been adjudicated as of yet. It's in the process.
Wait, what does that mean, your land hasn't been adjudicated?
That means the state-run process of settling how much water you're allowed to use and your priority date hasn't been completed through the court system.
Because even if you're taking water from wells or from rivers, you don't just get to automatically take it. That's there's different permits and different rights, and so there's that adjudication process addresses that each year.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this project or process hasn't been completed yet, so we aren't under. Well, go back into 2001. That was the federal project was shut off because the federal government had control of it. The upper basin off project irrigators were not shut off because we're all independent irrigators. And until this is adjudicated, there is no authority to shut water off because of the ESA or whatever, and there are no biological opinions up here because of that also.
Gary, Derry, are you a lucky or an unlucky farmer to be part of the irrigation project that, you know, that changed this land 100 years ago?
Well, I think that's pretty simple. Today, I'm pretty unlucky. Tom... is able to water this year, and I'm not, and that's a big deal when you're a farmer.
You mentioned, Tom, 2001. I mentioned it a little bit at the beginning of the program, the year where the federal government came in, turned off the water in the irrigation district because they said they needed more water for fish. It was got a lot of attention all around the country. A lot of high emotion involved in that. What do both of you remember about 2001, Gary Derry?
Well, I remember that first of all, I think everybody was very shocked that after 100 years of operating the project, that one day you wake up and you have no water. I think that's probably my biggest memory. Mm. The frustration and anger that went along with that was terrible, and it's hard to grasp what that does to you. Everything that you work for, your family. I'm a third generation farmer here, and all of a sudden one day all of that was in jeopardy, and that's my biggest memory.
Tom Malams?
The one thing that really was somewhat uplifting in such a horrible situation was that everybody was united. And that was the one thing that I will always remember. Obviously, our water was not shut off, and we did everything we could to assist the project irrigators in that process there. We even went as far as in the off-project area. A bunch of the landowners up here, irrigators, got together, and they started pooling what you would call an early form of a water bank possibility. We offered to the Bureau of Reclamation to idle land up here to let that water go into Klamath Lake so that the irrigators down there could use that water. We didn't get very far with it because the Bureau of Reclamation said, don't bother. They didn't want us to even do anything with it because they said they wouldn't be able to use it for some reason. And it was very disheartening to have people offer to idle their ground without getting paid. Nobody was asking to get paid for it either. And the Bureau of Reclamation said this. Their quote, I made one of the calls, and they said, don't bother.
Mm. Since then, as we've mentioned a bit, and we've covered on the show before, there's been this agreement, the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement. Complicated. A lot of people who disagreed with each other intensely sat down, talked for more than 5 years, putting together a plan to share water into the future. And as we've mentioned just now, it was recently signed a few months ago. It still needs to be funded. It still needs to be approved by Congress. But how do you both view that agreement? Gary Derry, you were part of it.
Well, I think the important part here is that we have been out of water. This is the second time in 9 years that we're facing this kind of a problem. And that's what's led us to the KBRA 5 years ago. We recognized after 2001 that we were going to be faced with this again. And we remembered the struggles of 2001 and what it felt like to be without water. So we started talking to people and seeing if we could come up with common ground. And we have. And I think the KBRA is pretty good. I support it. It's not perfect. Farmers have made a lot of concessions. Everybody's made a lot of concessions. And it's not going to be perfect. It's very complicated issues. But it is a step in the right direction. And I'm very hopeful that even through this year, that we can hold it together. I mean, we need a lot of support. The people that have worked hard on the KBRA have given up a lot, and those people are still, even though we're shut off, trying to support it and continuing to support it. But we have to be here a year from now to keep that process going forward. That's my thoughts on it.
You feel like the drought puts... this year puts a fair amount of stress on this agreement, Gary?
Well, I think everybody's kind of raising an eyebrow look and going, you know, is this KBRA going to help us in the long run? Is it not? I'm still hopeful, and I think most people are hopeful, and I don't want to see it fall apart. We've been working on it for 5 years, we're just going to have to go forward and hope that the support is there for agriculture as we go through this year and help agriculture get through this very, very difficult time. And hopefully when October comes, the KBRA will help bring to light the need for management of a resource, the resource being the water. And we have to manage the resource properly. And I think KBRA really helps address that.
Tom Malams, what's your take?
Well, before I get into that, I think there's a technical difficulty here on our line here. Halfway through Gary's thing, my volume on my receiver in here dropped way off. I can still hear you, but it's
But not too much. Gary was talking about how he supports the agreement. He thinks the resource needs to be managed, and he said, you know, the agreement obviously isn't nothing's happening because of it this year because it just was signed and it still needs to be funded and approved. But he was saying he hopes he thinks it's under perhaps a bit of stress. People are raising an eyebrow, hoping that farmers will be here at the end of this season to continue to support the agreement.
Yes, a lot of that I would agree with. To a point, I know he said a lot of concessions were made. I will respectfully disagree with some of that. The motivating forces behind the dam removal and the KBRA, in my view, have not made very, very few concessions. They have put a wish list out there, and in my way of thinking, they've gotten pretty much all of their wish list filled, where the irrigators, project and off-project irrigators, the very best we've got is some maybes and some hopes for this or hopes for that, that the when the document is actually completed, that maybe we'll have something out of it. The concessions that were advocated for and actually demanded for in the KBR and dam removal are permanent concessions, and the very best this is ever going to be is a 50-year contract to start with. And like I said, there's just a lot of vague language in there. Most people agree it's not a real good document. There's problems with it. But they are being forced into signing it because that's, and I can understand this to a point. There, they don't have another option here, and that, any other options have been eliminated from the process through the KBRA and dam removal because clear back in November, I think it was 2008, when the agreement in principle first came out on dam removal, and in the KBR meetings they said. Point blank, dam removal, complete, utter destruction of the dams is the only option on the table. So there are no other options in that part of the agreement.
Tom Allens, I want to ask you to stay with us and Gary Derry as well. And as you pointed out, one piece of the Klamath Agreement, the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, is removing four dams along the river there over the next couple of decades. Stay with us. We're in just a moment. We're going to hear from the state's perspective from the Oregon Water Resources Department.
Also, if you lived through an earlier severe drought, how does that experience shape your view of what's happening right now? Our number is toll-free, 1-888-665-5865. Our website is opb.org/thinkoutloud.
This is Think Out Loud on OPB. We're talking today about a drought facing the Klamath River Basin. I'm Emily Harris.
And I'm Dave Miller. Reminder, you can catch the full Think Out Loud rebroadcast at 9 p.m. tonight. You can also download our show anytime you want at opb.org/thinkoutloud.
We have two farmers from the Klamath River area still with us, Gary Derry and Tom Malams, both alfalfa farmers, one who gets water through the irrigation project that pumps water from Klamath Lake and Klamath River and some other reservoirs to farmers' fields. Tom Malams provides his own irrigation through wells and taking water from other rivers. They'll be with us in just a moment, but we're going to go to Tom Paul now. He's the deputy director of the Oregon Water Resources Department. He's joining us by phone from Salem. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. And also thank you for including the Water Resources Department in this discussion.
Oh, you seem to be right in the middle of things. Both Gary Derry and Tom Malams talked about managing water, managing the resource of water, and the good management is the key to A, farming, and B, farming and also allowing enough water for fish to survive in the Klamath River. If water were managed differently this year, would there be a drought, Tom Paul?
Well, we certainly have below normal water conditions in the Klamath Basin. Precipitation is way lower than normal. The snowpack is lower than normal, so we would experience less water than what we would definitely like to see and what we normally see.
How do you make the decisions about when to release water to farmers? As I understand it, water's just recently been released about 5 or 6 weeks later than the irrigation normally starts.
Klamath Basin is a little different than many of the other basins in the state of Oregon. As was previously mentioned by one of the participants, the Klamath Basin has not been adjudicated yet. And what an adjudication does, it quantifies the water rights for those uses that began prior to adoption of Oregon's water law in 1909. So those are the oldest water rights in the basin. Until that adjudication is completed, we cannot regulate for or against those early priority dates.
Wait, do you mean that's a one-time thing that sits down and figures out who has priority over the water, or is that something that happens each year?
Well, the adjudication occurs once. Hopefully it occurs once. We actually began the Klamath River adjudication in 1975. There have been a few court challenges. We've been to the U.S. Supreme Court on two different occasions, so it has taken a long time.
It seems like... I mean, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not involved, but it seems like an extraordinarily long time.
There are a lot of complex issues in the Klamath adjudication process. There are the water rights of the two gentlemen that you've been talking with this morning, their claims to rights either individually or through the project. Additionally, we have claims submitted by the federal government, tribal claims, as well as claims for the wildlife refuges. So there are a number of issues that are being addressed related to water use.
Tom, Paul, we got a comment from Water for Ag who wrote, it's important to note that even though Klamath Project farmers may get one-third of their normal amount of water, they're not all going to get that. Some will be completely without. So which project farmers are going to be getting water and which ones might be getting no water at all?
Well, the Bureau of Reclamation, in the case of the project, decides when to allow water into the canals, when water is diverted, and that's largely driven by the Endangered Species Act and river flow elevations as well as lake elevations.
So how much water is needed to keep the endangered species, fish?
How much is needed to comply with biological opinions that have been issued. Once that water is diverted, then the irrigation districts have to decide how they share or how they allocate the water within their boundaries to the various customers that they have.
And, I mean, is this true that this comment that we got from Water for Ag that some farmers may actually end up getting no water, even though they're also, you know, they're project farmers?
Well, I believe you heard Gary say a little earlier that his Shasta View land, they have elected to land idle that entire district. And what that means for them is that they will receive no surface water or no Klamath River water this season. So those lands, some may use groundwater, as Gary mentioned on his alfalfa ground, but there may be some lands that go totally dry this summer.
Tom Malams was talking about having wells on his property. Tom Paul, do people drill wells in drought years if they're not getting surface water?
Some folks are drilling new wells in Oregon in order to use groundwater for irrigation purposes, like is being discussed. It does require a water right issued by the Oregon Water Resources Department. Since the governor declared a drought in the Klamath in the middle of March, another tool is now available to the farmers in Klamath as well, and that is requesting a drought permit from us to use groundwater as a backup supply to make up for the shortage that they're experiencing from the lack of surface water.
You have to have a well to do that, I guess.
In order to get groundwater, that is correct. You'd have to have a groundwater source, a well, with either a supplemental water right from us that we've issued in previous years or under a drought permit that we would have issued this year.
What is the consequence of taking more water from the from groundwater, you know, in years where the surface water isn't available?
Well, we're going to see, and we're already seeing, a lowering of the groundwater table in some areas of the basin. In many locations, that groundwater is directly connected to surface water in the form of spring discharges, which enters the rivers and streams. We could also see some well-to-well interference where you have two neighbors that are pumping water, pumping their wells pretty hard. You're going to see water levels decline in the area. Some people, if their wells aren't deep enough, their well may actually go dry this summer. Mm.
Gary, Derry, do you have any wells?
Yes, we do. We have about 80% of our land will be covered by well water, providing that that resource is stable enough to use through the summer.
And do you need to get any permits to use them in this drought year?
I did not use a drought permit this year. We have a water right certificate on one well, and then we have a supplemental permit on another well, and it was not necessary to get a drought permit on those wells.
Do you see any effect on water in the basin overall as more people use wells?
Well, I think it's like Tom Paul said, the water levels are dropping around the basin. We're in contact with Oregon Water Resources on a regular basis. And he's right, they're coming down. He knows better than I do. And they're coming down, and how adversely that's going to affect domestic wells and ag wells, time's going to tell. But certainly the more water you pump, the higher likelihood you're going to have problems.
Tom, Paul, we spoke earlier about the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement and heard from both Gary and Tom Malams, another alfalfa farmer who's still with us. This is a historic agreement. It's not starting yet. It was just recently signed. How do you see it from your position with the Oregon Water Resources Department? How do you see this agreement being tested by this year's drought?
Well, as was mentioned, this is really a new agreement. It's going to be tested because people don't know exactly what is in the agreement and how it will function.
In the future.
Right. And this year, there really aren't any provisions in the KBRA which will be implemented this year. There are other measures that are being taken, such as funding from the federal government to support land idling and also the use of supplemental wells.
Because isn't the essence of the agreement that it's supposed to lay out a way for water to be shared so that it will, in a way that it will survive through drought years? Here there is a drought year. That kind of agreement in principle has been reached, but it's not actionable. So you're facing a drought year in the same old political conditions because even though all the dialogue and some agreement has happened, that seems like a particular challenge, Tom Paul.
Well, it is a challenge, and the Klamath Basin Agreement does talk about drought and extreme drought. Groups are working together right now to define what those two terms are and what impact or what actions will result in the declaration of a drought or an extreme drought. But at least right now, those provisions are not in place. So this low water condition came about a little early, if you will. If the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement would have been a couple years old, we would have had more tools in place to address these low water conditions. It is certainly a water-sharing tool. Once the KBRA is in place and operating, and once the Klamath adjudication is completed, you will have a document that does provide certainty to the water users so that there's an understanding of what's going to happen in normal years as well as drought years.
Mm-hmm. And Tom Malams, just very briefly, I know you don't like many provisions of the KBRA, and I understand that you're not party to that agreement. Are you hoping this drought year will make people see serious problems as you view it with them, with the agreement?
Well, I don't want to ever be classified as hoping the drought year is going to hurt people or whatever, but I will respectfully disagree with Mr. Paul on the KBRA if it was in place. And the actuality and the real reality of it is, if the KBRA had been in place right now, we would be in a worse position than we are right now, because the KBRA also mandates for additional in-stream flows that have never existed before. We can't service the in-stream flows that we've got right now. That's why we are at a lake level problem. This is a man-made political drought that we're in right now. The numbers don't support the idea of this being a real drought, depending on where you get your numbers from. Now, the NOAA Weather Service, we got some updated numbers from them. Right now, for the water year, we're at 79% of normal for this year. That's not a real drought condition. The drought condition is really a reality in the Klamath Lake levels, which is caused by the in-stream flows being mandated down the Klamath River. They're dumping water out faster than what's been coming in during the winter months, which is normally when it would be filled up. And the KBRA does not address those. It actually, like I said, it makes it actually worse in drought years, because you still have to, under the biological opinions and the ESA, you still have to have those mandated flows going out of the river.
For the fish. Okay, stay with us. We will be continuing this conversation. We're talking right now about a drought in the Klamath River Basin. If you have any experience with drought, or if you've farmed in that area, give us a call, 1-888-665-5865.
Or you can share your experience on our website, opb.org/thinkoutloud. Coming up, we'll hear what this drought looks like from an environmentalist's perspective. It's Think Out Loud. We're talking today about what could become a historic drought in the Klamath Basin and how that drought might affect an equally historic agreement between fishermen, farmers, and environmentalists. I'm Dave Miller.
And I'm Emily Harris. You can join this conversation with your questions or your experience. Our number is 1-888-665-5865. Our website is opb.org/thinkoutloud. James Honey has joined us. He's the Klamath and Rangelands Program Director for Sustainable Northwest and has been involved in hammering out the Klamath River agreement. He's joined us in our studios. Welcome to Think Out Loud.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me here.
Do you see this drought this year as being challenging for the newly signed agreement on future water sharing?
Absolutely. In a way, it's sort of the worst possible occurrence, in that over the past 5 years, parties in the basin, conservation groups, Indian tribes, and farming and ranching interests, as well as agencies in California, Oregon, and the federal government, came together and tried to develop a plan that would, in fact, be able to avoid or manage through years exactly like this. It's in place. It sits on paper. It's not applicable in this year. So the stuff that Gary is experiencing this summer, the concerns we have with the lowest recorded lake level in Upper Klamath Lake and its impact on sucker fish, those are things.
Suckerfish and endangered species.
Yes, two species of fish that are threatened and endangered and very valuable to the Klamath tribes. Culturally, those were a really significant part of their subsistence diet and really important in their culture. The restoration agreement was essentially designed to be able to avoid some of the impacts that we're seeing this summer with a management system that doesn't really do an effective job at balancing downstream fisheries needs with upstream fisheries needs, with the needs for certainty for agriculture in the upper basin.
All those needs have been there for a long, long time. What do you think having an agreement in place that's not applicable yet this year, what has that changed? Has it changed the expectation that some that people will really be supported? Has it changed the hopes? Has it deepened the skepticism? What has it done to change the way people are viewing this drought year?
Well, I'll have to speak from a kind of Sustainable Northwest perspective, and that's intersecting with farmers and ranchers in the basin, in particular with Indian tribes. I think we have a lot of hope. We look back at the series of crises that have occurred starting in the 1980s with the listing of the suckerfish, 2001 with the loss of water to the project, 2002 with the impacts to the lower basin fisheries, 2006, when the commercial fishermen weren't essentially able to fish off on the Pacific coast. We look at that
because there weren't enough salmon coming down the Klamath.
We were concerned about Klamath salmon. We look at that litany of problems, and they all come from a management system that was designed kind of piecemeal. And what the restoration agreement tried to do, and in fact we believe achieves, is combine all of those issues together, looking at fisheries recovery as kind of the foundation, that we have to work within a system that recovers fish. And then we're able to provide much more certainty to farmers and ranchers about what type of water they can expect on a year-to-year basis. So we have tremendous hope. I think that hope is imbuing how people approach this year, but you can't eat on hope. You know, we're hearing Gary talk about the issues that he's facing. I've been in many rooms this summer. When you don't have water, hope is not going to carry you that far. My real hope, and I think we have to go on this now, is that we will get some additional support both for the farming community to help them basically eke through this summer, that we continue to pay attention to the fisheries issues. Fisheries have been impacted for 150 years now. But that we are able to move into that next year when we can implement the restoration agreement and start to avoid the types of issues we're facing this year.
Dave?
Yeah, Tom Paul with the Oregon Water Resources Department. There is a commenter in the Oregonian recently who is taking in some ways a longer view than what we've been looking at so far, writing that I understand that a single year event isn't conclusive, but this drought cycle is not a single year. There are indications that our eastern Oregon desert regions are going to get warmer and drier. We're talking today not about eastern Oregon, but about the Klamath Basin. But what kind of long-term climate models is your department looking at and envisioning for the next 10, 15, 50 years?
Well, we've been actively working with various folks on the climate change issue. What we are seeing, or appear to be seeing, is a reduction of snowpack and wetter springs. And that is consistent with what we're hearing about the potential for climate change, where we have more rainfall, less snowpack. In the case of the Klamath, that will impact the folks above the lake, possibly more than below the lake, because with the precipitation, you're still going to get the water in the lake to store. But so much of eastern Oregon relies very heavily on snowpack as their reservoir to meet the summer water needs.
I want to go back to farmers who've joined us, Gary Derry and Tom Malams, for a moment. Gary, one of the next steps in the Klamath Basin Agreement, as I understand, is to write a drought plan, is to have something in place so that there's an agreed-on system for managing a drought before a drought happens the next time. You may be involved in this, since you've been involved in hammering out the agreement. What would be the key things you'd want to see in a drought management plan?
Well, in a drought management plan, you have to start and you have to evaluate your supply, and that boils back to management, and I think that's where you've got to start. You've got to manage this resource so that you can identify what's available. We have to remember that the Klamath Lake works like a bathtub. If you leave the plug out and you start filling it in the fall, it's still going to be empty in the spring. So you have to manage that lake as a storage facility. And in doing that, you help two species of fish. You help the tribe, you help the environmental community, you help the farmers. And that's what the KBRA is about. And once we have a supply, guaranteed supply, some parameters to work with, then we can identify through land idling, ground pumping, the concept that's described in the KBRA.
The guaranteed supply is one thing that farmers have supported a lot in the agreement. But in a drought year, can you have a guaranteed supply?
You can through the KBRA. I mean, Tom Paul identified, you know, drought, extreme drought, and the parameters for that. And they're pretty clear in the KBRA, and they're workable. And that's back to some of the concessions that Ag's been willing to make. We realize that there's less water, and we realize that we're going to have to do with less water, and that's where land idling programs help. That's where groundwater pumping helps. But we don't need to be in the situation that we're in this year, where you're forced strictly on a to push the groundwater so hard and have, you know, something less than 150,000 acre feet of surface water available in an untimely fashion. That's not a drought plan. That's a disaster.
Tom Malam's also an alfalfa farmer. How would you write a drought management plan, even though you're not part of the KBRA?
Well, I wouldn't even hardly begin to even try to write a drought plan, because they specifically in the KBRA meetings that I attended for a number of years there, they skirted that issue. They did not want to address it. They said it was going to be too complex for that group to do, so they finished the KBRA and required everybody to sign it without a drought plan. We could come up with something there, but a drought plan, in my opinion, is going to be kind of pointless, because the only thing that's being guaranteed in through the KBRA is that fish are going to get their water, and everything else that's left over is going to be divvied up by agriculture. And as the way the lake has been managed as a reservoir for irrigation, but the KBRA changes that designation and adds fish and wildlife to it, that's going to eliminate a lot of the possibilities to be able to manage that lake level for agriculture in any way, size, shape, or form. The KBRA also reaffirms the law that the ESA and the biological opinions are still going to stand, and the KBRA is not going to affect them in any way, size, shape, or form. Mm. So through the additional in-stream claims that are going to be mandated to happen in the KBRA, if you want to sign on to it and everything, that's adding an additional burden to a limited amount of water in the Klamath Basin.
Just
the
go back
fish
to...
are going to get the water first, and that because of the biological opinions and the ESA requirements. That's where those the biological opinions are written, partially looking at the amount of water that's supposed to be in stream. So the irrigators are going to be left out on this whole equation.
James Honey with Sustainable Northwest, that's some feelings that have run deeper prior to the Klamath Agreement, and as we've mentioned, Tom Malam's isn't part of it. You believe a drought management plan can be written. What would you include?
Well, I'd go back just to before even talking about drought management plan, looking at the KBRA as in fact managing many of the factors that we're seeing occurring this summer. The biggest change is a change in paradigm. Right now what we're trying to do is we're trying to recover coho in the lower basin and recover sucker in the upper basin. In the upper basin, we're just managing a lake level to try to recover sucker. In the lower basin, we're just managing an in-stream flow level to try to manage or to recover coho. What the KBRA does is it brings those two worlds together for the first time. So effectively what you have is a paradigm in which you are addressing all of the different issues that are necessary to recover fish. That is lake levels. That is improved flows downstream. But it's also changing water quality. In particular, the dam removal is a really important activity that allows us to provide more flexibility to agriculture. And another really important component is habitat restoration, in particular in the upper basin, in particular on private lands. When you bring all of those things to the table, you're able to move forward to fisheries recovery in a much more robust way, and thus, in turn, be able to provide a greater level of certainty to the farming community.
Because you don't need, we've just a couple seconds left here, but because you don't need as much water if the water's better quality?
Fish always need water. But if you address all of the issues that the ecosystem requires, we believe that we can provide a greater degree of flexibility and certainty to the ag community if we act on all of those things together. That's the big difference.
Well, thank you, James Honey, and all of you for joining us today. James Honey's with Sustainable Northwest, Tom Paul with the Oregon Water Resources Department, and Tom Malams and Gary Derry, alfalfa farmers in the Klamath River Basin. We'll keep an eye on that drought and check in later this summer, see how things are going. Thanks to everyone who blogged as well today. If you missed any part of the show, remember you can hear the full rebroadcast every night at 9.
You can also download it or sign up for the podcast at opb.org/thinkoutloud.
On Monday, we'll talk about a new study which found Oregon's most populated county, Multnomah County, quote, uniquely toxic for people of color.
That is a quarter of the county's population. Many of the problems are based on disparities in income, assets, and education. We'll look at why these inequities exist and how people are trying to change them. You can join the conversation right now. You can also share your own experience at opb.org/thinkoutloud.
Think Out Loud is produced by Julie Sabatier, Public Insight Network analyst Scott Silver, and senior producer Allison Frost. We have help from Vivian McInerney and Sam Sanders. Special thanks this week to Amelia Templeton. Our technical director is Stephen Cray. Dave Miller is our online host. The executive producer is Sarah Rothenfletch, and OPB's vice president for news and information is Morgan Holm. For the radio show That Listens, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm Emily Harris.
And I'm Dave Miller.
Have a great weekend. See you online.